All right, as always, thanks for joining us on Taking It Down. We're the Alabama Takes Pop Culture Discussion Podcast. This is episode 5. We've made it this far. I am your host, Blaine Duncan, and today I'm going to be talking to T.D. Wood, co-creator and one of the head writers at the Alabama Take website. He and I are going to be touching briefly on some movie news, comic book movie news at that, and then we'll kind of briefly touch on The Righteous Gemstones, too, particularly that first episode. As of this airing, I think episode 3 airs tonight on Labor Day weekend, but we will not be spoiling any of the episodes. So if you want to hear a little bit of talk about Danny McBride and The Righteous Gemstones, you can just keep on playing. No spoilers coming. A little later on, I'm going to be talking to Kevin Halbrook, where he and I were going to wrap up some thoughts on the back half of the second season of Mindhunter. There'll be spoilers there galore, but that's later in the episode. So find yourself a wave pool to baptize yourself in, and we're going to start taking it down. All right, man. T.D. Wood joins me. Tell me what's up.
Oh, nothing much. In a state of satisfaction, if you will, after our first full Saturday of college football, it feels right again. The world is at peace.
It really does feel good. Yeah, I was thinking about yesterday how enjoyable it was. There were some decent enough games going on. And for anyone listening who hasn't visited thealabamatake.com, you and I keep a pretty regular flow of articles going on college football, at least. And every Saturday we have we make some against the spread picks. So if that tickles anyone's fancy, check us out each Saturday morning. We're up bright and early. Well, technically we post them so that they're up bright and early. I don't think either of us are too bright or too early, yeah. But
no. How did you do yesterday? I know Auburn backdoored me, and I still got a game tomorrow night. But
right now, I'm sitting at 3-0. So, well, all three. There's no right now. I went 3-0 total.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah, I was. Again, satisfied is a good additive. I felt good about it. I really was proud of myself for picking that Memphis game, Ole Miss at Memphis game, to be such a disaster offensively, because that's kind of what happened.
Yeah, that game was not for anyone who wanted to see well-polished football.
I thought we'll cut the college football talk short here in just a second, but I thought Rich Rod would have a hard time in the SEC, at least for a few games. That's kind of what I thought would happen, so.
No, yeah, I think you're on point with that. I think next year is the year that they start to be a little dangerous.
Could be. Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. All right, let's get into, first of all, let's kick it off, MCU and Sony's. They're in the media cordial to one another, but, you know, there's some ball dropping happening, am I right? So Spider-Man's out of the MCU.
As far as we know it, yeah. There, of course, things can always change, and you know, that's still a few years before I think the next Spider-Man movie is slated to come out. So, but yeah, for now, apparently Disney got too greedy, I guess, is the official story.
That's exactly how I'm reading it, man. They wanted 50-50 instead of the, what was the percentage? Were they getting
like 5. Yeah, which I guess, look, here, I have two things. One, yes, Disney, you already own the world. You don't need any more money. It's okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, Sony just shutting it down and not even trying to negotiate somewhere around like 25. Yeah. What exactly has Sony done for that franchise since Spider-Man 2? Nothing. Spider-Man 3 was awful. The reboot with Andrew Garfield was just, it was nothing. It was so bland and lame that you couldn't even say it was awful. It didn't even deserve that description.
Exactly.
They have, yeah. And really, if I'm being honest, I think that all Sony gave us was one really good Spider-Man movie and Spider-Man 2, one okay to good one in the first Spider-Man, and then crap. So If it wasn't for Marvel and, you know, Disney, really Marvel Studios, like, we'd just be watching yet another reboot, which we might be doing again down the line. So,
yes. Yeah. I'm pissed. The first day I heard the news, I was disappointed, and then I just got outright pissed at all parties involved. I'm with you. That's 50-50 is ridiculous. They, come on, Disney.
Yeah.
You've got bank. You're sitting on mountains of cash. Just settle for 20%.
Exactly.
Settle for 25%.
You're about to release Disney Plus. You know, you're about to have a streaming service, which by all accounts, is going to be amazing, and they're going to take over the streaming world. So, I mean, I know for one, there's a bundle that's going to have Disney Plus, Hulu, and then ESPN Plus for like $12 a month, and we're going to pay that. Yeah, that's just going to happen.
That's that you can't beat that. No. And I'm really against all these streaming services. Last year when ESPN Plus came out, I rolled my eyes so hard, I gave myself a headache. Mm-hmm. And but now that I see that it's going to be bundled in $12, I'm thinking, okay. But even Disney Plus is just going to be $7 or $8.
Yeah, or I think even like $4 in some cases. So,
holy shit! I mean, you give me all the Disney movies, all the Marvel movies,
Star Wars
stuff, and I've got a 2-year-old running around at the house. You think I'm not going to pay $7 a month for that?
That's you know, that's, you can weaponize that. That's.
It's so true. Not to get too tangential, but I'm all about Disney Plus, and you know, they have my money. My wife and I have talked about how it's coming in November, and we already are sitting with our credit card in our hand, ready to enter the number and buy it, or excuse me, subscribe to it.
Yeah, it's definitely the living manifestation of that meme with Fry from Futurama, just, you know, with the wad of cash in his hand going, take all my money.
Yep. So they've got I think they're going to have to quote Borat, they're going to have great success with that.
Yes.
There's no way that's not going to be a nice little moneymaker for them. And everything they're going to put on there is made in-house.
Right.
So they're making money on stuff they've already made money on.
Mm-hmm. And their production, you know, even if the new shows would just absolutely have to bomb for it to be a disaster. And even then, just the back catalog you have is, yeah.
So back up. So they have no reason. Well, in my point of view, my eyes, they have no reason not to sit down and go, okay, 50% is too high. What can we do with you, Sony?
Yeah, exactly. Got too greedy and Sony got too defensive right away. Like, there's no reason, because the only people hurting this are the fans who, after having two great Spider-Man movies and all his great involvement in the MCU, now potentially that's off the board and it's just disappointing.
Mm-hmm. I thought the most recent one, Far From Home, was as good as it gets. I really think they nailed everything.
Especially to do it right on the heels of those great post-credit scenes and the teasers for what's to come. It's just horrible. It's a horrible thing. It's horrible timing all around, and only the fans get screwed. So, you know, Sony and Disney, get your shit together and work something out.
Mm-hmm. I think they will. That's my prediction on that. I really do think in about 6 or 8 months we'll hear, okay, we've got it worked out.
Yeah, because you remember how long it took for Disney and Fox to work to agreement to get the X-Men and Deadpool and all that. That took over a year, so.
Yeah. But, yeah, what a disappointment. How do you feel if it doesn't work out? Do you think the MCU, are you still, does it change your fandom at all? Without Spider-Man in the MCU?
I mean, no, the MCU will roll on and I'll still go watch every movie and buy everyone, you know, just because what I do, I enjoy them. Even the worst of them, you know, I still enjoy to a degree because I'm a fan. You know, it's like I'm a pro wrestling fan, and even as awful as it would get, we'll still tune in every week and just to see what's happening. You know?
Yeah.
I think it would definitely suck a lot, just because it's been so well integrated. And from his first appearance in Civil War, you know, he's been so important to what's going on, and they just positioned him as the new Tony Stark. So to lose Peter Parker already, it's horrible, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's my worry, that they have done a bit of writing around him, and now they're going to have to, if this deal doesn't work out or if they maintain their distance, they're going to have to do some writing to kind of backtrack, which bothers.
It does, but I mean, I guess the good news is they still have, you know, we have Shuri and, you know, Wakandan technology, which is, you know, better than anything. Mm-hmm. And then there's Reed Richards lurking in the dark, you know, he's going to come up somewhere. So, you know, he could easily be your next big science guy, him and Shuri. I think that's, but yeah, of course you want them to get Peter Parker back in the fold.
Yeah. Yeah, but growing up, Spider-Man was the first comic that I would buy off the rack. Yeah. Spider-Man and X-Men, I'd buy them both, and then I would, and then once I read those and got and read those three or four or five times, I would go back and finally pick up maybe like a Fantastic Four or a Batman or something. But Spider-Man and X-Men were always the first one I grabbed.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
So it's kind of I'm kind of sad because I thought they had a good thing going. That character is good in the MCU, and Tom Holland, I thought
he's amazing,
nailing it. You know, good kid too. Oh well, got thoughts. They'll work it out. I've got feelings.
Yeah, you just have to hope, because there's so much time before the next Spider-Man movie that they're going to get it worked out. So yeah,
agreed. Yeah, let's shift gears. Let's jump to the other side of the fence for DC. Okay. And you tell me, I know you have a lot of thoughts on this one. I don't. So I'm going to open the lane for you and just let you drive to the basket. Tell me, we got the Joker coming out next month in October, and you've got a few thoughts. So here you go.
I do. And it's funny. I've actually been texting all morning with our friend Caleb Johnson, whose debut novel Treeborn is in paperback at all your local retailers right now.
And he actually has prompted me to ask you this. He kind of gave me the brainstorm for this. So tell me about the Joker.
I'm sure he has. You know, I'm looking forward to it in a very cautiously optimistic way. It's been getting, of course, rave reviews from people that've seen it so far. And, you know, Joaquin Phoenix, he's an amazing actor, of course. You know, and this is the case that Caleb keeps pleading to me, but one, I'm not going to like a movie before I see it, so that's not going to happen. I mean, unless it's anything to do with Jurassic Park. I don't care how awful, goofy those are. I love every Jurassic Park movie ever made. Make a million of them, please. But as far as Joker, the danger in it that I see is that we're giving an origin story to a character who doesn't have an origin story, and that it's dangerous to kind of shoehole him like that. You know, you could ruin the character in itself. And artistic license is one thing, and it's all fine and well, but at what point are you know, gutting the character of its core foundation, what makes it, and just making a movie where a guy is in a costume as the Joker, but you're not telling a Joker story, you know? And that's my worry about it.
Yeah, and you do run the risk of stripping away a lot of mystery.
Yeah, and these previews, some what I've seen, I don't want to say they're making him into like this anti-hero, but they kind of are, and hopefully that's just a big tease, and once you get to the movie you see his true colors, because you know the Joker is an inherently evil person, an evil character. You know, he's a homicidal maniac, so you don't, I worry about anything that paints him in any kind of sympathetic light, because you just can't. And if you do that again, you're stripping away what makes Joker Joker, and then you're not telling a Joker story, you're telling your own story and basically ripping off the Joker character and using it as a costume, a mask. And so I'm worried. I do have faith in the director and the actors, so we'll see.
Yeah, Todd Phillips, right?
Yeah, Todd Phillips. I love all his stuff. It's definitely a different avenue for him now, but
yeah. I don't know a lot about him other than he's renowned. Critics like him. Mm-hmm. It's promising that he'll be at the helm of this. And Joaquin Phoenix is always weird and good and interesting.
Yeah, he's always.
But here's the thing with me in DC. I could not, the only really take I have on this is that I could not be more ambivalent about DC than I am right now. They have done disastrous things, but this one just almost doesn't even look like a DC movie.
Exactly, and that's another part of this thing. It's like, well, what has DC done to earn our trust on this? You know, and yeah, it's one of these weird, you look at Todd Phillips' past, like his directorial credits, you know, he's known for Old School, Road Trip. Those were his big things. He did this Starsky and Hutch remake, which I loved. I know a lot of people that just don't like that movie. I loved it. It was stupid and goofy. I thought it was great. And of course, The Hangover. So this is really different.
So that's Todd Phillips, The Hangover?
That's Todd Phillips, Hangover, old school, that guy, yeah.
Okay, maybe I do know more of his work than I thought.
I mean, granted, yeah, two of the funniest movies of the past 20, 30 years, you know, kind of, you know, of their generation, maybe the top-notch comedies, but yeah. So it's interesting. I'm interested to see where it goes. I will be there. I'll go watch it, but I'm cautious about it because, like you said, DC hasn't really done anything to earn a leeway like Marvel has.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think right now I'm waiting on some of the about three or four critics that I thoroughly trust, and if they give me the green light, I'll go.
Yeah, yeah. We know Phoenix will be great because he's just great and everything he's in, you know. You don't have to worry about that, you know. That's
well. Here's a transition. Here's a segue for you. I know a guy I never have to worry about his work. I'm always in, and that's Danny McBride, yes, as well as Jody Hill, whom he often works with, and David Gordon Green, I think, is the third guy on the Righteous Gemstones. And you and I both have a pop culture relationship with Danny McBride.
Yes.
So tell me how you feel about him.
I'm with you. That's a perfect transition because, yeah, I'm in for anything he does. I love him, and he's like, you've seen Zombieland, right?
Yes.
You know where Emma Stone talks about how Bill Murray makes her feel. He just hits her funny bones. She can't help it. Everything he does. That's Danny McBride to me. Anything he's ever been in, he just makes me laugh. And I can't pinpoint why. I mean, he's a funny guy, so you know, it's him doing the work. But everything he's in, I just laugh my ass off. And I mean, from like the Foot Fist Way on up, everything he's ever done.
Yeah, the Foot Fist Way is actually good. It's not nearly as funny as he grew up or he grows to be as an actor and writer. Yeah, but it's
That Hot Rod, his part, which is a supremely underappreciated movie.
It's good.
Pineapple Express, he's ridiculous. The crew guy in Tropic Thunder, you know. Like, he's all these little side roles he had, but every time I just watch him, like, that guy's hilarious. And then when he finally got like, on Eastbound and Down, of course, you know, we watched a lot of that on 19th Street. And
we did. As roommates in college, you and I were watching Eastbound and Down. And I think that might have been my real introduction to him, other than seeing him in those small roles in Hot Rod and Pineapple Express. Did you watch Vice Principals?
You know, oddly enough, I watched a couple episodes and then for whatever reason stopped and just never picked it up. And every time I'm on HBO Go, I'm like, I should start watching this again, and I don't. And it's the damnedest thing because not only is it Danny McBride, but it's got Walter Goggins, another person who anything he's in, I'm like, I'll watch it.
He is fantastic in Vice Principals. In fact, Vice Principals may be one of my favorite comedies of the last three or four years.
That might be. We just finished watching, you know, the latest season of Glow, and that we need a new show, or I need a new show that I could just binge on and I haven't seen yet, because right now I'm watching old episodes of Justified, speaking of Walter Goggins.
There you go.
And The Wire, which is always something I watch anyway, so.
Vice Principals really captured the feelings of a teacher and how we want to say awful bad things to people when they don't behave a certain way, but you can't. But of course, it being a TV show, they could. And every time it was almost like a figurative high five from the TV.
Yeah, I wonder how you felt about that with being a teacher and everything.
It's so good. It's so good. Yeah. And Righteous Gemstones, without getting into any details or nothing specific anyway, it's a little less crass. Vice Principals was pretty crass, and which is Danny McBride's signature. And I think maybe you were trying to define what it is about him that just made you laugh. One of the things, I bet, is just how he does not care how crass, how vulgar he gets.
Yeah, I think part of that, and especially being from where we're from and living where we have lived, we all kind of have one of those friends. Yes. I think that's a little bit of it, is that we all watch Danny McBride and go, that's so-and-so. Like, a friend that you love to hang out with, have a good time, but sometimes you find yourself, like, in the other corner of the bar just watching him, like, oh, no, I didn't come with him tonight. No, no.
Oh, exactly. Yes. I've watched the first episode of The Righteous Gemstones, but I don't think you have, right?
Right. So I guess I could ask you the questions. How does it, so you briefly touched on it, but how is it similar to his past work and how is it different?
Man, here's the deal. And I just watching one episode, I think it's a more nuanced, a more grown up version, but still just as funny. And okay. This one, it seems like it's going to have more plot. Vice Principals had plot. It had a couple of storylines going, but this one has like two or three more storylines. Like instead of two, it's got four or five. So it's going to be A, funny, and B, like really interesting, like cliffhanger kind of interesting. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Which is
so it's got that. Yeah, it's got that going for it.
You know, I always love that in a comedy too. When the comedy can reel you along week to week or episode to episode, where, and I think it adds that much more to it if you actually care about the characters.
Yes. And I'll give one detail again. It's not a spoiler. Watch, and this is a growth of Danny McBride as an actor and not just a writer. Watch how he struts in this one. This character has a strut that his other characters did, like a gait, has a certain way of walking that I think Danny McBride was just improved upon as an actor. He's still going to some of his go-to, and no one acts more childish than Danny McBride. No one does childish better than Danny McBride, but watch his strut. When he first walks in the room, I watched it twice because Kelly, my wife Kelly watched it last night, and I just sat in the room while she caught up on it, and I just laughed again and noticed smaller things that I thought, that is kind of a mature comedic actor right there.
Some of his best scenes are just him walking in. You know, two that pop to mind right away are the scene in the first season of Eastbound and Down where he comes into school dressed in all black, you know, the alligator boots, and that Black Key song is playing. You know, that one that goes, was it Your Love or whatever? I don't remember the name. Yeah. And yes, it's just great. He's giving the guns to students and pushing them in the lockers. And it's just like peak Danny McBride. Like that entrance, he's got like a pro wrestling style where he just grabs your attention as soon as he walks in the door. And the other is, oh, wait.
This one. Yeah, go ahead.
The other is his introduction in This Is the End. Did you see that?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah,
you've forgotten all about that movie. That's a pretty good movie.
Do you remember his introduction is him waking up like in the bathtub, like doing a line, lighting a joint, going downstairs and like strutting and then just eating like all their food that they ration off because he has no idea that the world ended the night before. He just partied himself into a blackout. But just the way, like he has a way of his introduction in a scene or a movie is just top notch. It grabs your attention right away.
I'd almost forgotten all about that movie, but it's still pretty good. Now I'm bringing it to mind now. Okay, well, I should have said this maybe at the beginning, but for anyone who doesn't know, The Righteous Gemstones is about a family whose name happened to be Gemstone. Eli Gemstone's played by John Goodman. He is the he's like a head preacher, head of a mega church, and his sons they're a part of it now, I guess, as they've gotten older. And Danny McBride plays Jesse Gemstone. Adam Devine plays Kelvin Gemstone. And then they have a sister, which I didn't know they were going to have a sister. That sort of came as a surprise to me. It's Edie Patterson, who may be the scene stealer. She's sort of going to be do you remember Stevie in Eastbound and Down?
Yes.
How he sort of, not that she's going to be anything like his character, but he sort of stole a lot of scenes. I think that's what Edie Patterson's going to be in this show. It's going to, I can't wait to watch more, though.
Okay.
She was in Vice Principals. I don't know if you'll recognize her because that's the only thing I had seen her in. My wife Kelly had seen her in something else, but I wasn't as familiar with her until I watched Vice Principals. She's good, though.
Okay. Yeah, I don't really think she's in Blackish, too, so that might be she's probably got some
okay
cred from that. But no, I'm looking forward to it. It's definitely, I was planning to watch it last night or this morning, but, you know, I got into college football last night and woke up and watched a fairly decent soccer game this morning. So,
oh, okay. A little more football, if you will.
Yeah, and a rivalry match or a derby, if you will. So it was, had that intensity too. Arsenal versus Tottenham, the North London derby. 2-2 draw, but good comeback.
Are you fans of either of those teams?
I'm an Arsenal fan.
Okay.
Yeah, when we lived together with Caleb and he had DirecTV, it was the first time I'd ever come across that. And there's like a soccer channel on that I just used to have on in my room all the time while falling asleep or waking up. And it was always good to watch. Sometimes they'd have exciting games over, you know, that awful 11 o'clock Wake Forest versus NC State game, or, you know, that Jefferson Pilot, you know, Georgia versus McNeese State, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And so it was more fun to watch these games. And soccer's a great, I used to call it a great hangover watch, because you can just kind of fade out. And then when the announcers get excited, just kind of perk up and, you know. And I had friends that were Premier League fans, and they told me to watch. And you just fall into following a team. And I fell into Arsenal. And they had this cantankerous old French guy who never really accepted blame for loss. He just, you know, be like, well, I thought we were the better team today. We just did not get the win, but we deserve to win. I'm like, well, hell, I can fall in line with that. Hell yeah. So,
and so you got wrapped up in some football this week, and there's nothing wrong with that.
No, but I do plan on watching the Gemstones. I'm excited about it. And I think I'll now go back and binge on Vice Principal to catch up with that.
I highly recommend that one. Yeah. There, because if you like Goggins, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm actually, you know, Goggins is supposed to be on The Righteous Gemstones soon.
Yeah, I saw him in all the trailers. So that's some good casting right there. Because John Goodman, of course, is John Goodman.
The legend.
Yeah, exactly. He's the legend. Like, anything he comes in, you're just like, all right, let's see what he does here. And then I even like, what's his name? Adam Devine, is it his last name?
Yes, yeah. And I'm not, sometimes he overplays things, but he's never annoying with it for me. But in this one, he's
kind of nailed that.
For sure. It,
like you said, he's on the edge of just annoying you, and you'd be like, I hate this guy, but he knows when to tone it back just enough to like hook you. And I liked him and everything's done on his time. Workaholics, I loved that show. It was stupid and juvenile right up. And I liked his character on Modern Family. Yeah. He's kind of been on sort of saving grace of that, because I believe the show's kind of fallen off in the past few seasons. The writing is just not as strong, but I felt like his character kind of helped a lot. But
it really did. Well, he's definitely doing a pretty good job in the first episode of The Righteous Gemstones. He's not as over the top as he is in other things, and he's pulled it back, and he's very enjoyable. But I'm really looking forward to it. Maybe you and I will get back in a couple of weeks, and we'll have some more Righteous Gemstone stuff.
Yeah, definitely. That should be a good plan to kind of follow up with that.
All right. Well, let's call it a wrap on this one, and we'll again remind readers to go to the Alabama Take, get some more feedback. But we're going to take a break, and I'll be back to talk a little bit of Mindhunter. Anyway, TD, thanks for coming on again, man.
Yeah, man, no problem. Let's do it again.
See you again, man. See you.
All right.
Okay, thanks again for listening. We're about to talk to Kevin Halbrook in just a bit, but if you're interested in getting in touch with us, drop us a line at thealabamatake@gmail.com. There's a lot more to find at the site, thealabamatake.com. We hope you've enjoyed our really dumb college football prognostications, our predictions of late. We'll do some picks each Saturday morning, so you can join us there for those. Don't forget about the main podcast. It's just called The Alabama Take. It's in a separate feed. Subscribe to that. Corey Hanna interviews some of the best in Alabama and beyond, so subscribe to that. For both Taking It Down and the Alabama Take podcast, find us on your favorite podcast provider. Rate, review if you've got a second. Let us know what's up. You can hit us up on social media. Tell us what you want to hear from us. All right. Joining me now, we've got Kevin Halbrook from Where's the Line podcast, and He's back with us. He and I are going to wrap up a few thoughts on the sort of the back half of Mindhunter Season 2, as well as just the things that were going on in that Season 2 in general. So, hey, Kevin, what's up?
Nothing. Thanks for having me again.
Oh, man, I enjoyed it. And you, I guess you finished the season before I did, so our memories might start becoming fuzzy on the second season, but let's just talk about what did you think about the second season? Was it as good as the first? Did it disappoint? So where are you on it?
I think I like the second season a little bit better than the first one. Some of the problems I had with the first one kind of persisted through into the second season. But, you know, I think like I mentioned last time, I'm glad that we didn't have to deal with Holden and Debbie's relationship again, even though I think Hannah Gross is a really good actress. But that just was not clicking for me at all. I like the actor that plays Wayne Williams in the second season, the Atlanta child killer. I think he does a really good job with that. But I think overall, I like the second season a little bit better than the first one. How about you?
I do too. And I think because it established itself, there was very little it had to do as far as picking up any pieces or introducing anyone. Except for that first episode, it kind of felt like a reset button being pushed. But I really liked this second season, even though I don't know that it was exciting, and I'll put that in quotation marks. Like, it wasn't as, I don't know, there weren't those Ed Kemper hugging Holden moments, kind of.
Yeah.
It's like those huge moments, like, oh my God, what's going to happen moment. But it was something about the way that it was not all tied into a neat little bow fit the content as well of the Atlanta child murders.
Yeah, I think that the second season's a little more complicated than the first one.
Yes.
Thematically, because you're dealing with racism a lot. And particularly that I kind of like that they decided to focus so much on the Atlanta child murders, considering that those are technically unsolved. Mm-hmm. So it was something going into that, you knew you weren't going to get a neat little bow on the top of that at the end of it.
That's so true. And it kind of shocked me when we got into episode 8 and 9 and it was still on the Atlanta child murders. It shocked me in a good way. I thought, oh, well, shocked maybe is not even the word. I was just a little surprised because I thought they would have moved on into something else, but they didn't. And that worked as a motif, like the red tape. There was so much red tape for them to have to deal with and loopholes to try to jump through.
I could really, working at a university, I really sympathize with Holden having to deal with all that fucking bureaucracy just to get some flyers put out around the town, you know.
And to have to put the crosses together himself because they came in a box.
Yeah, yeah. I've spent an entire summer dealing with similar things, you know, clearly not as consequential as what Holden was dealing with. But yeah, bureaucracy can be infuriating.
I thought that was a very interesting, it's one of the images that lasted with me, him running down the street with the cross to try to beat the protesting parade and try to get in front of them in order to have the cross so that the cameras would catch it as the protesters came by. And then the way that it was shot, they switched it to like this grainy 8mm almost looking. I don't know, that had a lasting impression on me.
I did like the way that was shot, but I wasn't. Why do you think that they did it that way? I mean,
to me, I think it sent a message like, this is the white guy savior and there is no white guy savior. That doesn't ever work out. You know what I mean? Like the white man. That's how I read it. And especially with him carrying a cross, the whole savior thing really connected, I think, as a, as a thematic kind of thing. But it, you know, and the final message was he didn't do it, and he ended up probably looking very offensive to everyone. So that, to me, that was the message, like, hey, white people who think you're going to save people of color, a lot of times you're just being really offensive.
That was, I can't believe I didn't put that together. The white man running down the road with the cross is pretty much a one-to-one connection with Holden and the white savior. And I was watching that just thinking, what are they doing? I know they're doing something here, but it's just not clicking with me.
Oh, right, man.
Well, I'm a little embarrassed that I didn't put that together.
I think I may have had put it together by reading a few things and thinking through it. It didn't happen when I watched it.
What did you think about the Charlie Manson?
Yes. Episode? So we didn't get to that last time. We had not, or I hadn't watched that far. It felt a bit shoehorned, but the actor was fantastic. Using Charles Manson to shine a light on Bill Tench's frustrations as a parent and as a adoptive father of a troubled child felt kind of weird, but I didn't hate it. What about you?
No. Well, I liked it. I'm with you. I think that the actor did a fantastic job. He was also the one that played Manson in the new Tarantino movie, right?
Yes. Have you seen it?
Same guy? I haven't seen it yet, but I heard that it was the same guy.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I don't know. There was a couple of things about that. I liked that scene, but there were a couple of things that bothered me a little bit. And one was kind of attributing this, you know, suggesting that Manson might have telekinetic powers in that by making the clock stop. You know, I was like, you know, this is a show that tries to stay on the side of realism, and I didn't feel like that had a good spot, and I don't think that there was I don't feel like that fit in. I mean, it was entertaining, but it was kind of departing from what the show generally does.
Yeah. It was very entertaining, but felt like they just had to have Charles Manson at some point in the series.
Yeah. And then also, I mean, Charles Manson's a racist. I mean, he has a swastika in the middle of his forehead. He's a white supremacist. I felt like they should have tied Manson more in with this theme of racism that's going on in Atlanta in the show. And it didn't seem like they really made much of a connection between those two.
No, he was used more or less to rile Bill Tench up.
Yeah. Weird. Yeah, I felt like they could have done more with that.
That was, I think, a stumble on the show's part, but it was entertaining enough that I didn't hate it or cringe or get angry about it at all.
Yeah, no, I didn't either. I just like to complain.
No. Hey, we're here to nitpick. That's part of it. That's kind of how we get to how we feel about something, I think. So the Atlanta child murders ended up being the focus of the back half of the season, which I was fine with. And did you end up going and looking up any more about the Atlanta child murders because of the show?
Well, I probably will tomorrow. But no, I didn't really get around to it. I mean, you know, I knew the basics of it. You know, the 20-something kids, Wayne Williams gets arrested, may or may not have been the actual perpetrator of those crimes. Did you look more into that?
I didn't, but I just kept thinking, those things I know that you just recounted. The one thing that I kept thinking throughout the last two episodes was, okay, if Wayne Williams isn't guilty and this show is being fairly realistic, how is he not guilty?
Yeah.
Because, gosh, everything he was doing was weird and needed to be investigated.
Yeah, but there was, you know, during his trial, I don't know. I don't know enough about it to make a terribly informed opinion, but I feel like Wayne Williams might have been responsible for some or a lot of that, but I think a lot of people, and myself included, feel like maybe Wayne Williams was not responsible for all of that.
That I could see. I could really see that. It seems as though that would take more than one word. You'd think after all these years, he would have said that, or I don't know. If he's going to get out of jail, he probably would keep a pretty tight lid on everything.
Yeah, and during his trial, his attitude during that trial was more, it was, he had this attitude of sort of, yeah, I did it, but you got to prove it. You know,
Really?
Yeah, I felt like I got that impression. Like, if you see clips from him and read some things about some of the stuff that he was saying. But, you know, I also don't know if... So what he got convicted for was enough to put him away for, you know, the rest of his life.
Which was only
I feel
the
like
murder.
He might have the.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, it was two. It was two murders that he got convicted for, and they were both adults, I believe.
That's it. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, but his personality is such that maybe I can kind of see him being the sort of person that's okay. I'm going to be in jail for the rest of my life anyway. I might as well be a celebrity while I'm here. You know, so why not just take credit for the rest of this stuff and be the Atlanta monster? I don't know. It's just a thought.
That's sort of how they played it on the show. That's how they wrote it. He, with him going up to the mayor's house and taking the camera crew with him.
Yeah, he's definitely a showman.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I didn't know that about how he acted. What I'm kind of assuming, this is a horrible way to do it, I'm sure, but just kind of assuming that they got a lot of factual things and put into the show. So if it really happened like that, he's weird and there was something going on. But if it, you know, I need to read more on it because it does sound really interesting. I bet there's probably a good book or two out there about it because unsolved cases are very interesting to me.
Mm. Yeah, there's a huge podcast called Atlanta Monster about it. I mean, it's...
I'm looking it up right now.
It's a couple of seasons and... Yeah, maybe 10 or 15 episodes per season. So I imagine with that length of time that they put into that, probably anything you'd ever want to know about it's going to be in there somewhere.
I am going to start listening to that. I appreciate the suggestion. I've got it pulled up here. That does look interesting. And that might answer some of my questions. This is totally tangential, but I want to ask you this, and I always forget until just now. Did you read the book about the Golden State Killer who... It came out, and then they caught him about 6 months after the book's release.
No. Didn't they catch him the day that book was released?
I think it was a few months after, because I had read the book, and then he got caught like a month after I finished the book.
Okay. Yeah, no, I hadn't seen it.
So it written by, I think her name was McNamara, but she's Patton Oswalt's deceased wife.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about that, but I haven't managed to read the book yet.
Is fantastic. It's a really good book, and sometimes true crime stuff I can take or leave as far as in writing. This one was so well done, but okay. So that was just tangential. I was just curious if you'd ever read that. I'd be interested if they ever do a movie about that guy because that's troubling and scary stuff in a way.
Yeah, I need to get around to that one. Because I have to read so much stuff for so much true crime for the podcast that I do that I don't really get time to read something if I'm not doing an episode on it. You know,
I got you. Yeah, it's well written. It's probably one of the better true crime books I've ever encountered. I just want to touch briefly Bill Tinch because that guy is such a fascinating character to me. And I mentioned last time how much I liked him from just from season one. He became one of my favorite fictional characters for that year in 2017. How did you feel about him and having to deal with his son being there at the scene of a murder and just Bill Tinch in general?
I felt really bad for Tinch in this season because he's this ex-military guy and he is well equipped to deal with people who do horrible things. But he is very ill-equipped to deal with his own adopted child doing something terrible and dealing with it on an emotional level. You know, I mean, he's got the cop thing down. He can, you know, go into a room and intimidate somebody and, you know, interrogate and slap the cuffs on. But when you're talking about this little 8-year-old kid who's done something, you kind of see that this is something that Tinch is not equipped to handle.
Yeah, it was.
And I feel bad for him over that.
Yeah, it was sad. It really was sad. And no one can smoke a cigarette like Bill Tinch can smoke a cigarette.
Well, I don't know. I'll do a side by side with him.
Yeah. I've made the joke online that get you someone that loves cigarettes as much as Bill Tinch loves cigarettes.
Yeah, he does always have one hanging out of his mouth.
Yeah, he does. So the director was Carl Franklin for the last few episodes. I thought he did a pretty good job. I didn't see any drop off in quality from what David Fincher had done.
No, I didn't either. They never tied up. They never even. Where the hell are they going with the Dennis Rader BTK thing?
Yeah, that was going to be the last thing I touched on. So perfect segue there. Man, I think they're just going to use it to creep us hell out for the next X number of seasons. And if this season was any indication, they are okay with kind of leaving things like, hey, this shit didn't get solved, and that's the way real life operates.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I am fine with that. But the fact that Dennis Rader has not interacted with any of the main cast at all, you just see these clips of him, you know, I think that... Maybe the last... What did he do in the last episode? I think is looking at what is presumably the Otero family's home, which was the first group that he murdered.
Yeah, isn't he looking at pictures in a motel room? He's laying out pictures or something like that? Weird? Or not pictures, but souvenirs?
Yeah, I guess so. So I guess...
That might have been one of his last scenes, but... you and I both wrapped up the season about a week or two ago. So, but he's like, they leave these questions surrounding Wayne Williams up in the air and in the season. And they also do that a little bit with BTK, although everybody probably knows BTK or Rader gets caught in like not the 90s. So yeah. I don't know. You know, you were talking in our last episode about Mindhunter, how it would totally piss you off if they used the genius of the FBI to catch him when in all actuality he was just an idiot and used Microsoft Word.
Yeah, sent him a floppy disk that literally had his name in the in the properties of the Word document he sent to them.
So I think the show would actually be fine showing that, like, the FBI wasn't smart this time. So if they do end up using him, there's promise, I think. And I think they showed a little bit of their possible hand by saying, yeah, the FBI doesn't get all this right.
Yeah.
Or the BSU doesn't get all this right.
Yeah, I'm just getting frustrated because these Dennis Rader segments are some of my favorite parts of the show, but you just get these little clips and then you go on to something else. I want Dennis Rader to be an episode or a season or
something. Gotcha. Yeah. Oh, it is one of my favorite parts of an episode. When it comes on, I wouldn't say I get chills, but I sit up.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, okay, what's going to happen with him this time? Oh, but yeah, too bad they can't, or maybe they will. I was going to say too bad they can't come out once a year. Maybe they'll pick up the pace this time, but it's a good show.
Yeah, I hope so. I don't want to wait 2 years for the season 3.
Yeah, true. Well, man, that'll be it. We'll get you back on again, and you and I'll talk other, maybe less gruesome things.
Well, you know, maybe we should find a good horror movie. That's more up my alley.
Yeah, that would be fun. If there's some on the horizon, did you have, by the way? And again, tangential, but hey, this is my podcast. Did you watch It, the chapter one It?
Yeah, the first movie.
Is it good?
You're talking about the one that came out a few years ago.
Yeah, like 2 years ago.
Yeah. You know, the original It, everybody acts like that movie is so great, and people act like they don't remember the fucking clown spider at the end of it.
Oh, God, that was horrible. The miniseries on, like, ABC, it was stupid.
Yeah. Tim Curry was great, but other than that. And it had creepy moments, but this one, it had a really good beginning when I went into it. So there's a, you know, one of the first scene is this kid, his paper boat goes into the drain, and he reaches his arm down in there to get it. And, you know, I was kind of expecting, oh, somebody's going to grab his arm, pull him down in there, something. But nope, that kid pulls back a blood-spurting nub And so I was like, all right, this is going to be great. But then for me, it was just kind of downhill from there.
Okay. So not great, but okay?
Yeah, it was fine.
Okay. Because I was thinking about watching it and then going to the movies and watching the new one. Because I really like Bill Hader. And I like, there's a couple other actors I really like that are going to be in it. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, maybe that one. Oh, we'll see. But thanks again, man, for joining us. And that'll probably be a wrap on Mindhunter, at least until it comes out again, season three, sometime down the road.
Well, all right. Well, thanks for having me.
Okay. And again, Kevin's podcast is Where's the Line? You can check it out at wheresthelinedot.net. Go find it if you're interested in true crime or even just the gruesome stuff that he and his co-host Samantha cover. It's fantastic. And that'll be it.
And we're getting pretty good at Instagram, too.
Yeah, we are. Yeah.
Talking pictures and everything now. So take a look at that, too, maybe.
Find them on Instagram. Find them on Facebook. They have a Facebook group that you could join. So that's wheresthelinedot.net. And that'll be it for this week's episode. We'll be back again in 2 weeks with another bit of pop culture discussion. If you have ideas or something that we should cover, or you just want to email and have us read it on air, just drop us a line to thealabamatake@gmail.com. We're also on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and you can send us a DM there. A special shout out to Brandon Walker for the very kind email about the Mother podcast, or the original podcast, The Alabama Take. So anyway, thanks everyone for joining us. Thanks to Kevin. Thanks to TD. And we'll see you next time.